Thank you all for coming again tonight. Good to see you all here. And we're going to start Lesson 3. And if you've got your Bible, if you will open it up to the 6th chapter of Genesis. Yeah, chapter 6 in the book of Genesis. This is where we're going to start tonight. Our first lesson covered the first two chapters of Genesis. Our second lesson covered chapters 3 and 4. Tonight we're going to cover parts of four chapters. We're going to be starting to pick the pace up a little bit here, and we'll be covering more and more material as we go along. If you were here last week, and almost everybody was here last week, we saw that there was a man named Adam and a woman named Eve, and God had made those individuals and put them in a garden and gave them many commands that they were to obey God and take care of the garden. They were to take care of the earth, and they had only one prohibition, one command where they were not allowed to do something. And they went off and did the thing that God said, do not do. And so they were sent out of this perfect garden, and they were not allowed to come back in this wonderful environment that God had made. And we saw that they realized that they were sinful, they had disobeyed God, they had broken their relationship with God, they had broken their relationship with each other, they felt uncomfortable with themselves, they had to cover themselves with clothes, and we saw that it just messed the whole plan, it messed up the whole plan that God had in mind. We also saw that God was kind, He was generous, He was forgiving, He showed His mercy to Adam and Eve, the man and the woman. And after that, we saw that the man and the woman had two sons, and that the one son, in a fit of anger, killed his brother. And then that son was removed from his parents' area. And so tonight, what we're going to do is we're going to pick up where we left off last time, but it's a long period of time from this week's story and last week's story. Adam and Eve had a third son whose name was Seth. And then they had other sons, they had other daughters, and the population of the world at this time, and we don't know exactly what time this was going on, they began to multiply and multiply and multiply. So the number of human beings in the earth grew very rapidly. And the difference between last lesson and this lesson is over 1,000 years later. So during that period of time, the earth began to fill up with human beings. A lot of people on the earth at this time. And we're going to find out in tonight's lesson what kind of people they were. Okay? Now, as we begin with chapter 6, we're going to jump around just a little bit. And we're gonna move in order of kind of a theme tonight. We want to see what kind of people Adam and Eve had as descendants. What kind of offspring did they turn out? What kind of people did they turn out to be? We saw that Adam and Eve had violated God's command. They were evil in God's sight. Let's see what happened to these people. So let's read verse 1 in Genesis chapter 6. That's where we are right now. And it says, when men began to increase in number on the earth and daughters were born to them, the sons of God saw that the daughters of men were beautiful, and they married any of them that they chose. Now, what this really means is that there were men and women, and the men basically were marrying any girl that they wanted for any reason. And there's a saying, I guess, in our country that says, as the family goes, so does the country. And if you lose your identity or your definition as a family, then the country ceases to become a civilized nation. And what's going on here is that men were just going out and marrying this girl and this girl and this girl and this girl. And the whole concept of family was being ruined. It was falling apart, okay? And So they were really corrupting society. They were making their world into a terrible place. Let's go down to verse 5, and let's see what else was going on. It says in verse 5, "The Lord saw how great man's wickedness," that's evil, "on the earth had become, and that every inclination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil all the time." The only thing man wanted to do, the only desire in his heart, was that he just wanted to go out and do whatever was wrong. All the time. Everybody. And there were a lot of people on the earth, and it was like, if you can imagine the whole world forgetting what good is, and everybody just running off to do whatever was bad. All the time. That is what the situation is here. It was hopeless, in other words. Okay? Let's look at verse 11. Gives us a little bit more information. Question? All right, we're on verse 11. It says, "Now the earth was corrupt." That's another word for like evil or rotten, just falling apart, being destroyed. "It was corrupt in God's sight and was full of violence." So not only was the evil bad, but the people were violently bad, causing injury and harm to other people. And then in verse 12, "God saw how corrupt the earth had become, for all the people on the earth had corrupted their ways." Now, you have a lot of words in here that gives us the idea or the picture of this time period, that everybody, down to the last person, it seems, was evil, wicked, sinful. No matter how you describe it, it is not a good picture. Society was falling apart. There was no love, there was no kindness, there was no good. And God says, man, this is totally terrible. This is not what I planned to happen. Now let's see what, let's go back to verse 3 and let's see what God's thought about this situation was. Let's see what he decides to do. In verse 3, we're going to look at God's response to this. Verse 3 says, "Then the Lord said, my spirit will not contend with man forever." That means he will not stand against, he will not allow this to stand all the time. He's not going to put up with it all the time. He says, he will not contend with man forever, for he is mortal. In other words, man is not going to live forever. He is going to die physically someday. And he says, since he's going to die physically, God decides that he's going to give them a certain period of time to change their thinking and change their behavior. So he says, his days will be numbered 120 years. So now God is going to be give them the opportunity to change their behavior, to change what they're doing. Because their behavior is not helping anybody. It's only causing problems, violence, pain, evil. And he says, enough is enough. I'm not going to allow this to go on forever. And so I'm going to give them 120 years to stop it. Now, usually, if you see a parent in a room and you see a child and the child is throwing things up against the wall and dragging things around and knocking over the furniture and that sort of thing, and the parent is just, oh my, look at the little boy go, and doesn't do anything to stop that child, you would think, that is a bad parent. Why has he let that child tear the place apart? And so a good parent would come along to the child and they would say, if you don't stop that, I'm going to count to three. If you don't stop that, I'm going to do something to you to stop you. And it's usually like a spank or something like that, or sit down in the chair, or whatever kind of correction they have. But a good parent will not allow the disobedience to continue. And that is the way God is acting. He's giving these people 120 years to get their act together, to change their thinking, change their behavior. So you can see that he's really even being kind by giving them that long of a period to change. 120 years. That's a long time. Okay? So you can see, even though he's going to act with correction, you might say he's going to act with some justice and some judgment, he's really being kind in his judgment. Let's look down at verse 6. It says, "The Lord was grieved." In other words, he was sad that he had made the man on the earth, and his heart was filled with pain. Did you know God can feel pain? His heart was filled with pain. So the Lord said, I will wipe mankind whom I have created from the face of the earth. Uh-oh. What's going to happen to them if they don't change in 120 years? He says, men and animals, creatures that move along the ground, and birds of the air, for I am grieved that I have made them. In other words, it was so bad of a situation that God said, I feel terrible that this has happened. I feel sad about these human beings down there. All they want to do is bad and evil. And so he says, but, and here's a very big word, but, there was somebody, one person in the earth who was different. He says, but Noah found favor in the eyes of the Lord. There was one human being there who was trying to do what was right. Verse 9 says, this is the account of Noah. Noah was a righteous man, blameless among his people, among the people of his time, and he walked with God. Noah had three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. All right, so Noah here is a man who says he is righteous, he is blameless among the people. Let me ask you this. Is Noah a perfect individual? Is he just like God? Has he never done anything wrong? Not quite. He was a descendant of Adam, and Adam was someone who did things wrong. Eve was a lady who did things wrong. Everybody else in the earth does things wrong. I do things wrong. I think everybody here, if they were honest, would say, I've done some things wrong in my life. So Noah is not any different than you or I. He's a member of the human race. We do good things sometimes. We do bad things sometimes. We are have some kind of evil inside of us. We don't always do the things we know we should do. And Noah was like that too. But Noah tried. And Noah, when it came down to it, remember last week we said that God made a promise that he was going to send somebody? Noah was a person who believed in God's promise. He knew that God would someday send somebody to take care of all of the evil in the world. And so when it says he was a righteous man, that means that he was believing God's promise. That's what it means. And when people believe what God says, when they believe God's promise, they will have the kind of life that people say he was blameless among the people. The people looked at him and said, oh, well, Noah doesn't do anything wrong. He really did. But those people, being very, very evil and wicked, they didn't see Noah the way God sees Noah. So Noah is believing God, believing God's promise. And let's go down now to verse 13. It says, so God said to Noah, I am going to put an end to all people, for the earth is filled with violence because of them. I am surely going to destroy both them and the earth. That means he's going to change the conditions in the earth. He's going to destroy it. Verse 14, so God continues speaking to Noah, make yourself an ark. Now, does anybody know what an ark is? An ark is a very, 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 very big boat. A huge boat. Almost like a cruise ship. Okay? Now, it didn't look like the cruise ships that we have today. It actually looked like a big barge. You know what a big barge is? Where you stick, it's a big flat boat, flat on the top, and it kind of sits in the water, and they put oil in it or other things like that. They stick a lot of things on top of it. Well, God says to Noah, I want you to build a huge, big boat that looks like a barge. Okay? Now, this may sound very strange. And if it sounds strange to you, that's okay. But let's read on and see what he's going to do here. Make yourself an ark out of cypress wood. Make rooms in it and coat it or paint it with pitch inside and out. Now, pitch is another word for tar. And tar is waterproof. When they make roofs in the United States, they put tar up there. It's another word for pitch. So when it rains, it doesn't leak. Okay? So he says, put this black tarry stuff on the boat and put pitch on the inside and put pitch on the outside. So he's going to make it watertight. And then in verse 16, he says, make a roof for it and finish the ark to within 18 inches of the top and put a door on the side of the ark and make lower, middle, and upper decks. So the boat had three levels to it, a lower deck, a middle deck, and a top deck. Okay? And then he says, I am going to bring a flood. Flood waters on the earth to destroy all life under the heavens. Every creature that has the breath of life in it, everything on earth will perish. It's going to die. There's going to be a flood. And it says it's going to kill everybody. Every animal, every human being, except whoever is on this boat. And why is that going to happen? Because human beings, if they don't change in 120 years, if they don't believe God's message, they will die. That's what God says. It's just like the parent saying, if you don't stop turning over the furniture, I'm going to have to put you in this chair and you cannot get out of the chair anymore. Punishment for the child. Well, these people are violent, angry, evil, corrupt. And God says, if you don't stop that and change, you're going to be gone. You will die. Now, this shouldn't be a surprise to us, because you remember what he said back to Adam and Eve? When you disobey me, what was the consequence? You will die. And Adam and Eve are gone. They're dead now. This is 1,000 years later. They're already dead. They were proof, not living proof, they were dead proof, that what God said happens. And that's the thing that we see in the Bible. Whatever God says happens exactly the way he says it's going to happen. Every time, without fail. See? That's why when he makes a promise, you can count on the fact that it is going to happen just the way he said. Now, it's interesting that Noah, while he was building this huge boat, he was doing something else. You know what he was doing? He was the messenger to tell all these people all around this place, you better watch out. There's going to be a flood. And the people, they would listen to Noah, and they had to decide, is this guy telling us the truth or not? He says we're all going to die in 120 years. And they had a choice. Are they going to believe what this guy says or not? Is he telling us the truth? What is the truth? Who knows? But remember, they knew that Noah was a fairly good guy. He was trying. He believed God's message. He believed God's promises. And so he made this boat big enough for whoever would believe God's message could come into the boat and be saved from this big, huge flood. That's what the boat was for. It was for the human beings and for the animals. And he made it plenty big. For anybody who would believe God's message, change their ways, get on the boat, they could save their lives. That's what his plan was. Let's see how many people believed what Noah told them. Chapter 7, verse 1. It says, the Lord then said to Noah, go into the ark, you and your whole family, because I have found you righteous in this generation. How many other people went with him? Just his family. Nobody else believed. Now, we don't know what their response was, but it certainly wasn't the right response. They might have thought Noah was crazy. They may have thought Noah had lost his mind. They may have laughed at Noah. They may have teased Noah. They may have made him the subject of jokes. You know, we don't know. But whatever their response was, it was the wrong response, because only Noah and his family were the only ones allowed to go into the boat. So in verse 2, God says to Noah, take with you seven of every kind of clean animal, a male and its mate, and two of every kind of unclean animal, a male and its mate. Now, a clean animal is an animal that eats or kills its food. An unclean animal eats food that's already dead. Is that clear? Okay, everybody understand that? Okay. And so we have these different kinds of animals. And it says 7 days, I'm sorry, where am I? Verse 3, and also seven of every kind of bird, male and female, to keep their various kinds alive throughout the earth. So we see now that the ark was also for animals. 7 days from now, I will send rain on the earth for 40 days and 40 nights. It's going to rain without stopping for a month and 10 days. And I will wipe from the face of the earth every living creature I have made. and look at what Noah did at verse 5 of chapter 7. And Noah did all that the Lord commanded him. He obeyed whatever God said. See, you can tell that Noah believes what God is saying. Because when you believe something, it will show up in the way you respond. It will be apparent in your behavior. People will see it. People can tell what you believe by the way you act. And Noah here is being faithful. Whatever God says, he hears it, he seizes the truth, and he does it. Let's go down to verse 11 now. And it says, so in the 600th year of Noah's life, on the 17th day of the second month, on that day, all the springs of the great deep burst or broke forth. Now, what does that mean? What I think that means is, does anybody know anything about volcanoes? Anybody know anything about volcanoes? When you see a volcano erupt, like Mount Pinatubo in the Philippines lately, last 2 months or so, what is the main thing that most people think comes out of the volcano?
Lava.
Lava, sure. But that is not the biggest thing that comes out of volcanoes. You know what comes out of volcanoes more than lava? Heat, water, steam, water. Okay? A volcano will bring forth all kinds of hot steam and water, and it shoots it into the air. Everybody talks about the lava that comes out of the volcano because it's this black stuff and it runs down the side of the mountain and it burns everything up and then people run away screaming. And that's what makes it interesting to watch on the TV. But everybody forgets about the steam. Well, if you can imagine volcanoes like Mount Pinatubo all around the whole world all of a sudden violently erupting all at the same time, think of how much water, steam, water vapor that would be. It would be just unheard of. Something like this probably had never happened before. As far as we can tell, it never happened before. So when it says the springs of the great deep, I believe that could very well be speaking of volcanoes erupting all over the whole earth. And then in verse 11 it says, and the floodgates of the heavens were opened. Now this is a very interesting thing too, because if you remember back in Genesis chapter 2, Genesis chapter 1, let's go back to something and let's look at something in creation about the way God made the earth in the first place, okay? Let's go all the way back to Genesis chapter 1. I want to show you something. In chapter 1, verse 6, if you remember, if you were here, and most of you were, when God made the world, he made it first covered with water. The whole earth was covered with water first. And then in verse 6, it says, and God said, let there be an expanse, that means a space, okay, between the waters to separate water from water. So somehow there was a body of water on the earth. There was a space between that water and the other water that God is talking about. You have two separate bodies of water with a space in between. Now, if there's water in the earth, where do you think the other water went? Nobody wants to guess on that one. I think it went into the sky. And it completely surrounded the earth and made the whole earth to be something like a tropical country where it's warm, where everything grows very green, lots of trees, vegetation, things like that. And it seems as if it's not, you can't prove it exactly because no human being was there at this time, but it seems as if this is saying that the whole earth was like a tropical country. Comfortable temperatures all around. There was no North Pole with ice and snow. There was no South Pole. And it seems like the way this whole thing had this water vapor in the air. A lot of water vapor. Tons and tons of it floating around out there in the atmosphere. Okay? Now, if that is true, if that is the way God worked it, and then look over in Genesis chapter 2. I want to show you something else. In Genesis chapter 2, look at verse 4 in that new paragraph, about halfway down. It says, when the Lord God made the earth and the heavens, and no shrub of the field had yet appeared on the earth, and no plant of the field had yet sprung up. Now watch this next phrase. For the Lord God had not sent rain on the earth. People had never seen rain before. It had never rained before this. It says, and then look down a little bit later in verse 6, it says, but streams came up from the earth and watered the whole surface of the ground. That sounds very tropical, doesn't it? Streams and mist and you know, the dew in the morning and that sort of thing. Well, it sounds very tropical. It sounds like you're living around the equator, lots of plants and trees and things growing like that. And so if we go back to Genesis chapter 7, and it says in verse 11, the floodgates of heaven were open. If it was true that there was this huge amount of water floating around in the atmosphere, and it decided to fall down to the earth, and these volcanoes are exploding from below, and you have all of this violent activity in the earth, you can see that what God was doing here was a very big, destructive event. I mean, this was total chaos. People, when Mount Pinatubo erupted, just ran like crazy. Well, what if you have a volcano here and a volcano there and a volcano? You can't go anywhere. Everything is just falling apart. Rocks are breaking up. All this water is just coming flying down. You know, and the whole world just began to be destroyed. Okay? Verse 12, and rain fell on the earth for 40 days and 40 nights. It seems like this was no ordinary rain. It wasn't a little thunderstorm that came over and it rained for about an hour, and then it moves off, and then the sun comes out and it dries everything up. It wasn't like that at all. Rain, straight, solid, heavy, for 40 days. That is a lot of water. That's a lot of water. Okay? We probably would, you know, our gauges would break if we were there. So in verse 13, it says, on that very day, Noah and his sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth, now this is the day that God told them to go into the ark, together with his wife and his wives and the three sons entered the ark. Verse 14, they had with them every wild animal according to its kind, all livestock according to their kinds, every creature that moves along the ground according to its kind, and every bird according to its kind, everything with wings. It's a summary that says God told Noah what to do, and Noah did it exactly the way God said. And verse 15, pairs of all the creatures that have the breath of life in them came to Noah and entered the ark. The animals going in were male and female, every living thing as God had commanded Noah, and then the Lord shut him in. How many boats were there? One. How many doors into the boat were there? One. See, there was one way out of getting away from this disaster. One way out. One boat, one way to get in, one way to get out when it was over. One door. See? And this is very similar to what God's promise that he had made earlier. How many people did he promise to send that would take care of the evil in the world? There was one person. See? Same kind of idea. God has a plan, one idea, one way of escape. So in verse 17, for 40 days the flood kept coming on the earth, and as the waters increased, they lifted the ark high above the earth. Now let's go down to verse 21. It says, every living thing that moved on the earth perished, died, was lost. Birds, livestock, wild animals, all the creatures that swarm over the earth, and all mankind. They all died. We don't know how many people there were. Thousands, maybe millions of people. Remember, this is 1,000 years later than Adam. At least 1,000 years. There are a lot of people on the earth, and every single one of them that were outside of this huge boat, they all died. Every single one of them. Verse 22, everything on dry land that had the breath of life in its nostrils died. Every living thing on the face of the earth was wiped out. Men and animals and the creatures that move along the ground and the birds in the air were wiped out from the earth. Only Noah was left and those with him in the ark. The waters flooded the earth. Now look at this. It rained for 40 days, but then the waters flooded the earth. They stayed on top of the earth as a flood for 150 days. How many months is that? 5 months? Almost a half a year. the entire, so people could not hang on to a log, you know, and float, you know, on this log for 5 months. They would drown or starve to death or something like that. There was no way people could survive. Why is it 150 days? Is the question. It doesn't really tell us. It's just recording the event. So it doesn't give us the rhyme or the reason that God had in mind. But I think God made it long enough to make sure that anybody who survived the rainstorm for 40 days couldn't survive floating on a log. Nobody was prepared for this. They had never seen rain before. And I doubt very seriously that anybody has seen rain like this either, even now. Okay? I mean, this was terrible. I mean, it destroyed everything. Wiped it all out. Gone. You know, as we say in America, they were history. They are no more. You read about it in the book somewhere. You'll never see these people again. They're not around anymore. Now, let me ask you a question at this point. Or maybe I should ask it later. I don't know. I'll ask it to you now. Does this story sound strange to you? Does this sound a little weird or different? It's okay if you say yes. If you really think, like, what in the world? What is he talking about? I've never heard of a story like this before. This sounds totally bizarre to me. Does this sound bizarre to you? It's okay if you say yeah. Most people, when I read this story, they look at me and they say, what in the world? This is in the Bible? I mean, come on, give me a break.
It's not the Bible, it's science.
This is science. I did a little research on this. If you're having trouble accepting this story, I have a little bit of information. People have done a little research to find out, could this have really been a true story way back when in time, you know, hundreds, thousands of years ago? Could this have really happened? That's a legitimate question. That's a good question. Bill, is this really a true story? Did it really happen in history? Did people really die? Was there a flood over the whole entire earth, big enough to cover the mountains, big enough to cover, to kill all the people and all the birds and all the animals that were on the earth? Is that possible? I mean, I never heard of anything like this before, and this sounds like a strange story to me. Well, let me give you a little bit of information that may help you to understand that this is a real historical event. Okay? People who research ancient people groups and tribes have noticed a very interesting discovery. And you don't hear this every day from scientists, but these things are true. People who research ancient peoples have found out that the Bible is not the only source for a story about a flood that covered the entire earth. As a matter of fact, people who lived hundreds and thousands of years ago, where they find their civilization, archaeologists and things like that, they have found out that there are a bunch of ancient peoples. When the archaeologists dig and they find their writings and their scrolls and their ancient histories and that sort of thing, they have found out that there are people all over the entire world that have a story in their history that is just like this story in the Bible. And they all didn't know each other, but they all have the same basic story. Now, let me give you an example. In Europe, they have found 31 different groups of ancient peoples who have a story just like this. And these 31 groups did not know each other. They were isolated, separated. They did not get together and say, hey, let's make up a story called the flood. They didn't do that. 31 different people groups just in Europe. In Africa and the Middle East, they have found 17 unrelated groups, ancient old people, or groups of people who wrote the same kind of information. 17 in Africa and the Middle East. In Australia and the South Sea Islands, you don't get very more separated than South Sea Islands. They are all over the place and they're all far away from everybody else. They found 37 different groups that had the same kind of story. In Asia, they have found 23 different isolated groups all over the continent of Asia that has the same story. The North American Indians, they have found 59 different tribes that had the same story in it. And in Central and South America, they found 46 different Indian groups that had the same kind of story in it. And the stories in every single, that makes a total, I think it's about 218. I forgot to write the total down. But that makes well over 200 different ancient people groups that had the same facts in it. And there are three facts that are found in every single of these histories. The three facts are, and most of them have a fourth fact. The first fact is there was a universal destruction by water. The second one is that there was a boat that was used as a means of escape. The third fact in all of these stories, all 200 of them, was that there were very few people that were allowed to go on the boat, and they were saved to start the human race all over again. And in a large majority of these ancient histories, there's a fourth fact in most of these. And the fourth fact is that the disaster came because man was evil. Over 200 isolated people groups have the same story in their histories. Now, does that prove that it happened? No. It doesn't prove it. But if there was an accident out in the front, in the street out here, and the police officer didn't see it, and he comes up to investigate the accident, and he comes into this house, and he gets testimony, and he writes down what Bert says, and or what Bert saw, and what Carol saw, and he goes across the street, and he gets the testimony of the neighbors, and he goes to the testimony of the neighbors over there, and he puts together all of the evidence. Does that prove that the accident happened? No. It doesn't prove it, but he can put together an account of what really happened, even though he didn't see it, even though he wasn't here. He takes all of the evidence, and let's say that everything that Bert and Carol said that they saw, and the neighbor saw, and the neighbor saw, and the other neighbor saw, and the people over there, it all, and they haven't talked with each other, but they all say the same thing. If you go into a court of law and you're trying to prove the accident, the evidence is sufficient to prove, at least legally, what happened. And people can sue people. They get, and that's how they determine basically what happened in the accident. This same kind of evidence gives a strong indication that there must have been something that happened a long time ago. And there are many scientists who know this information, and they don't want people to know that, so they just kind of don't look at the information. But the information is there, and the information is in this book too. Okay, just something to think about. If you're having trouble believing, yeah, I can. There's a book where I got this information from, and I can tell you about the book later. But anyway, so if that helps you to understand that I believe this is a very real story that happened to very real people on this planet, like we were talking about before, that may help you to think about that. Let's go to chapter 8. It says, "But God," now remember, they're in the boat, they're floating around. Verse 1 of chapter 8, "But God remembered Noah." Now that doesn't mean he forgot about him. That means that God kept them in mind. That's what that word remember means. God kept Noah in mind, and the wild animals and the livestock that were with him in the ark, and he sent a wind over the earth, and the waters receded. They began to dry up. Now the springs of the deep and the floodgates of the heavens had been closed, and the rain had stopped falling from the sky. The water receded steadily from the earth. At the end of 150 days, the water had gone down, and on the 17th day of the seventh month, the ark came to rest on the mountains of Ararat. Now, we know where the mountains of Ararat are today. That is in eastern Turkey. And it's interesting that in this region, there is not one mountain, there are two mountains. And that is exactly what this verse says. Mountains, plural, more than one. The mountains of Ararat, they are in eastern Turkey. They know exactly where these mountains are right now. This is the area where it says the flood went down and the ark came to rest on those mountains. The waters continued to recede until the 10th month, and on the first day of the 10th month, the tops of the mountains became visible. They began to see dry land again. Let's go down to verse 14. But the 27th day of the second month, the earth was completely dry. And then in verse 15, God said to Noah, come out of the ark, you and your wife and your sons and their wives. Bring out every kind of living creature that is with you, the birds, the animals, all the creatures that they move along the ground, so that they can multiply on the earth and be fruitful and increase in number upon it. What is God going to do? He's going to start all over again. He's going to start as if everything before never happened. And now Noah is the beginning of the human race again. So down in verse 20, it says, then Noah built an altar to the Lord, and taking some of the clean animals and clean birds, he sacrificed sacrificed burnt offerings on it. Do you remember what? Do you remember what Cain and Abel did in last week's lesson? They brought a sacrifice to the Lord. Why did they bring a sacrifice? What happens in a sacrifice? An animal has to what? Die, right? An animal dies. Why does God want an animal to die? Does he hate animals? No. He wants human beings to recognize what their sinfulness or what their evil results in. It results in death. God said, when you do something wrong, you will die. And he is using the idea of sacrificing an animal to show mankind, this is what you will get. You are going to die because of your sinfulness, so don't do your best not to do that. It also is going to show the pain, the suffering that the promised one is going to have to go through. When he comes and he shows up on the earth, he is going to have to go through something like this to get rid of evil, to crush the source of evil. And so, just like God sacrificed an animal to put clothes on the man and the woman, just like Cain and Abel brought a sacrifice, Abel's sacrifice was the right kind, he brought an animal. Now we see Noah believing the same promise, showing that he believes the same promise, and he brings a sacrifice as well. In verse 21, the Lord smelled the pleasing aroma and said in his heart, never again will I curse the ground because of man, even though every inclination of his heart is evil from childhood. In other words, I'm not ever going to do this again. No way. One flood, one time, no more. No more floods. That's what he's basically saying there. And never again will I destroy all living creatures as I have done. Let's go down to chapter 9, verse 1. It says, then God blessed Noah and his sons, saying to them, be fruitful and increase in number and fill the earth. Do you remember who he said that to before? He said that to Adam when he started out. And now we're having a start over time again. Verse 2, the fear and dread of you will fall upon all beasts of the earth and all birds of the air, upon every creature that moves along the ground and upon all the fish of the sea. They are given into your hands. Have you ever noticed when you walk through the woods that most animals run away from a human being? That's because that is the way God has made it. Everything that lives and moves will be food for you. Just as I have given you the green plants, I now give you everything. Now they can start eating hamburgers for dinner, meat. Let's go down to verse 12. And God said, this is the sign of the covenant. Now, covenant is like a promise. This is the sign of the promise that I am making between me and you and every living creature with you, a covenant for all generations to come. I have set my rainbow in the clouds, and it will be a sign of the covenant between me and the earth. Whenever I bring clouds over the earth and the rainbow appears in the clouds, I will remember my covenant between me and you and all living creatures of every kind. Never again will the waters become a flood to destroy all life. Whenever the rainbow appears in the clouds, I will see it and remember the everlasting covenant between God and all the creatures of every kind on the earth. What he's saying is that, and you've seen this, when you see a big thunderstorm roll by, and it just as it's going away, and the sun comes out, what do you see in the mist? You see a rainbow. God says that is a promise, his promise to human beings, that when it rains like that, it will never rain like it rained in the flood before. That's his promise. And scientists may say, well, that is just a certain phenomenon when the sun hits the rain and it makes produces this thing. Well, that's true. There is science behind what God does. That's true. But remember, it had not rained before on the earth. And until it did rain, you couldn't have rainbows, and there were no rainbows before. And so the rainbow is pretty to look at. It's nice to take pictures of. But it's also a message from God that says, remember, I made a promise. I will never send another flood. That is the message of the rainbow. A lot of people don't know that. But that's what the message is for. That says something to us as human beings. God is speaking to us when we see the rainbow. And down in verse 18, we'll finish it up here. It says, the sons of Noah who came out of the ark were Shem, Ham, and Japheth. Ham was the father of Canaan. And in verse 19, it says, these were the three sons of Noah, and from them came the people who were scattered over the earth. Now, there's one thing I want to close, one word that I want to close with here. The word scattered means...